Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on retirement at risk when we come back. You know, in 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt." Now, that clause follows the biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Private business is carried on in gold and silver coin. Public business is conducted in commercial paper. Commercial paper like stocks, bonds, Federal Reserve notes, credit, credit cards, debt, and usury. Back in 1965, Congress said that there is no difference in the value of gold and silver coin and clad coin or currency. And that's very true when you're dealing with banks, government, and commercial industries. But in the real marketplace, out here in the real world, there's a 7-to-1 difference in the purchasing power of gold over paper. And there's a 7-to-1 difference in the taxes that are due on that paper over the gold. Now, God and our founding fathers did not give us gold and silver coin for no good purpose. They knew, and they knew as a matter of law, that gold and silver coin was absolutely necessary for us to deal in order for us to establish our property rights. Well, neither did our Congress and politicians take our gold and silver coin away from us for no good reason either. They knew, and they knew full well back in 1933, that in order to subjugate a free people, they would first have to take away the people's gold and silver coin, to take away the people's right to property, and to destroy the people's property rights. Now, if you and I intend to regain our rights, regain our duties, regain our capacity, then we've got to first regain our property and property rights, and that's because property is the legal foundation of all liberty. So let me teach how to do just that. This business school is now on compact disc for you adult home schoolers. Now, for more information about my private business school, just call and order my free general law CD package. That's the place to start. It's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's informative and entertaining. It's educational. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order yours right now. The number, 417-273-4967. Now, again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, my business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. If you're online, why don't you go to the website georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for your free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about your retirement. Is your retirement at risk? Is your pension plan fully funded? Is your Social Security program set in concrete? Are you prepared to retire? Do you know that your retirement income is secured and ready for you when you retire and will carry you through your retirement years? Because if you know that that's true and that your retirement is set in cement and that it is secure, you're the only man on planet Earth that has that guarantee. And where do you think you got that guarantee from? Did you get it from President Bush? Did you hear that on Lou Dobbs' Moneyline? Did you get it on CBS or ABC or NBC or the Lair NewsHour? Where did you get such confidence in your retirement program? In the last couple of shows, I've showed you that the retirement isn't nearly as set in cement as we'd like to think that it is. If you take a look at the number of companies whose retirement programs are underfunded, how many American companies have underfunded their retirement programs, and the number is over half. Over half the companies in America are underfunded. Some of them are underfunded to such a degree that if they were to fund their retirement programs completely, it would bankrupt their companies. So Congress has set up an emergency program, an emergency pension program, kind of like Freddie Mac and some of these non-governmental agencies. And they just took over, for instance, the United Airlines pension program. So the people that were receiving pensions from United Airlines had their pensions cut in half. The people who work for United Airlines are expecting to get a pension. Their pension is going to amount to approximately 50% of what they were promised. That's why I raised the question in the first program. I said, are you overly expectant? Do you expect more than government or your company or you can provide for your retirement? In the last program, I said, I hope to God that I never have to retire, because the minute I go on retirement, I go on total dependency. Now, at this moment in time, I'm 100% independent, and I'd like to keep it that way. Most Americans are not only not independent, they don't even want to be independent. They're fully satisfied with dependency. They're fully satisfied with being on welfare or food stamps or working for the man or having a job with a corporation and relying upon a paycheck. That's normal in this country. I don't want that. Now, I'm what we call in economics a contrarian. A contrarian. That's a guy who is opposite of everybody else. And, of course, that's a minority opinion, and I'm selecting about 10 contrarian authors. Bill Bonner, Franklin Sanders, Richard Doughty, Bill Buckler, Bob Chapman, Jim Jubak, J-U-B-A-K, Liz Pullman, John Malden, Jim Puplava. And I said, let's take a look at their views and compare that with the economy, and let's just see how safe your retirement is. Here's Bill Bonner's take. In a letter to James Madison, Thomas Jefferson asked how one generation of men has a right to bind another. He concluded by saying, quote, no generation can contract debts greater than may be paid during the course of its own existence. But contracting debts greater than may be paid during the course of its own existence is precisely what Americans are doing today and have been doing for 75 years. In fact, Americans are contracting debts that increase over the course of their own lifetimes. George W. Bush will go down in history not as the Great War president that he envisions. We recall predicting earlier this week, but as the greatest debt beat president that this country has ever known. In George Bush's 5 years in office, the federal government has borrowed more than $1 trillion from foreign governments and banks. This is more than all of the rest of the nation's administrations put together from 1776 to 2000. Last month, the U.S. national debt passed the $8 trillion mark. This year's budget deficit alone added $319 billion to the country's obligations. And that's what they admit to. That's a lie. It's $513 billion. But according to the feds themselves, the deficits are going to continue to rise to $873 billion a year within the next 10 years. In two more years, and they will be at $1 trillion per year. In 12 years, we will be in deficit. $1 trillion a year, with a national debt edging up to $20 trillion. $20 trillion in 12 years. By the year 2017, annual deficits are projected to reach $2 trillion a year. Now, these figures are not just guesses. They're projections based on boondoggle laws that are already on the books. According to the Bush-friendly Heritage Foundation, federal deficits are expected to rise to $1 trillion a year by the year 2017 with a $16 trillion national debt, twice today's level, and after that, deficits should grow to $2 trillion a year. Public debt is a remarkable thing. Through generation after generation, over thousands of years, each one usually left the world a little better than it found it. More land was placed under cultivation, more animals were tamed and corralled, more houses were built, more factories were put up. Occasionally, empire builders, adventurers, or natural calamities set things into reverse. After the collapse of the Third Reich, for example, Germans found themselves with a pile of rubble. But armed, occupying troops were on every street corner, guarding all of that rubble. But still, those little krauts that were born in Dusseldorf in 1945 entered the world debt-free. That German could rebuild, and then he could enjoy the fruits of his own industry. Today, a child born in America practically has an electronic ankle tag put on him from birth. He's got his share of about $50 trillion in obligations to pay. They need to make sure that he doesn't get away. And as far as we can tell, no other generation in history has ever been burdened to such an extent with the expenses of their parents. Even in the private sector, the get-it-while-you-can attitude crushes the next generation. In the third quarter of 2005 alone, Paul Casserole of Northern Trust Company reports U.S. households spent $531 billion more than their after-tax earnings. About half of that money came from equity extraction from their homes. In other words, the present generation is selling off its houses one room at a time. By the time the tadpoles come of age, there will be nothing left. Consumer spending has risen to 76% of the economy. Before 2000, it was only 66%. The savings rate has fallen to less than 2%. Student loans outstanding have risen more than 800% since Ronald Reagan took office. Mortgages are up nearly 900%. Credit card debt is up 500%. Finding no better source on the subject, we quote ourselves. America's debt will not be paid by those currently working, nor even by those currently breathing. It will be pushed on to the next generation and the next generation and the next generation. One generation consumes and the other pays. What the first enjoys as a blessing comes to the next as a curse. It doesn't seem fair, says Bill Bonner of the Daily Reckoning. Now, Bill Bonner and the Daily Reckoning is also published on Kitco.com. So if you'll go to Kitco, K-I-T-C-O.com, you can also go to www.thedailyreckoning.com. Thedailyreckoning.com. Now, Bill Bonner raises an interesting subject here, or an interesting question called debt. This was first tackled, this national debt problem, by what we call the Figge Company, Figge International. Put out a little book here, it's called Tackle the Debt Before It's Too Late. It was copyrighted back in, I think it was 1983 or 4, back during the Reagan years. Let me read this little short booklet to you, because they predicted that when the budget deficit hit $500 billion a year, which it's been over that while Bush has been in office, that the tax and interest structure of the economy would no longer be able to control the economy and that it would slip into hyperinflation. Now our new Fed chairman, his name is Ben Helicopter Bernanke. He said in a speech back in 2003, he said, if we need to, we will push $100 bills out of helicopters. to keep liquidity in the system. Now, of course, he was exaggerating. We're not going to push $100 bills out of helicopters, but we're going to make the liquidity available even if we have to loan it to Halliburton or start a war in Iraq, Iran, and Venezuela all at the same time. Whatever it takes, that's what we're going to do. But we're going to go into hyperinflation. And when I raised the question of this week's series of programs, is your retirement at risk? We started with a fella out in Colorado. Remember the guy in Colorado? What was his name? Let me look his name up here. It was in the February 2005 Reader's Digest. His name is Ed Beltram, B-E-L-T-R-A-M. And remember, Ed Beltram worked at Lucent Technologies in Oklahoma City. He had a retirement program, a pension program from the company. He was programming in his Social Security, and he moved to Denver, Colorado. He bought a house out there, and Lucent Technologies went nearly belly up. Their stock went from $64 to 58 cents. He lost $250,000 of his pension program, and now he's working on a golf course for $7.50 an hour. We talked about Ed in the last couple programs. And I asked the question, is your retirement any safer than Ed's? And the answer is no. No, it isn't. In fact, every pension program in America is going upside down. Oh, you're going to be paid every dollar that you were promised. Don't get me wrong. Social Security, boys and girls, is going to pay you every dollar. The problem you're going to have is that the dollars are getting ever cheaper. With hyperinflation, the day will come when you will be paid tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands, even millions of dollars a month. And those millions of dollars won't buy a loaf of bread. As your currency becomes totally worthless, as the continental currency became in 1783, totally worthless, as the Weimar Republic currency in 1923 became totally worthless, as the Confederate currency became totally worthless, that's where the American dollar is going. And in fact, every currency in the world is going to collapse, because every currency in the world is tied to the dollar. And remember, the dollar is the reserve currency. And the reason that every country in the world is working their hearts out to keep the American economy, to keep this economy going at all costs, is because when it collapses, so does everybody else. Everybody's tied to this economy. And like the pensioners at United Airlines, Delta, American, Delphi, General Motors, Ford, all of those pension programs are going into the tank. Now, if you weren't prepared for this pension program to start with, if you weren't imagining life in a Winnebago tooling around the country at somebody else's expense, it probably won't be a problem. But that only affects the Amish and George Gordon. Everybody else has a dream. Remember Martin Luther King? He said, "I have a dream." Americans have a dream, and they want to hit the lottery. They want to hit $1 million at the casino in Las Vegas. They want to retire on their pension. But it ain't going to happen. That's the bottom line. It ain't going to happen. And as it is in all Ponzi schemes, the people that get in early collect, and they're happy as clams at high tide. Then those in the middle get pinched, and those at the end get nothing. Listen to this. Henry E. Figge, Jr. He said, "I want to thank you for the opportunity to address you today on the subject of the national debt. And I want to stress first and foremost that I'm a businessman. I have never been, and I never intend to be, involved in politics. However, if you wonder why I'm up here, I really love my country. I love this country. I love the United States of America, because as I tell people, where else but in America could a person from humble means whose father died when he was 16 follow his life plan and build two companies? And I'm here today because I fully believe that this great country of ours is headed into serious trouble because of the government's dangerous inability to reduce its debt or to control ongoing budget deficits. So I became involved in this issue quite by accident in 1982 when Peter Grace made me co-chairman of the President's Private Sector Survey on Cost Control. It was called the Grace Commission. As a result of that Grace Commission, I became privy to some information that I wish that I had never heard, that I had never known anything about. Information that showed me how threatening our government's spending policies are. This past Tuesday, I met with several congressmen on the subject, including Congressman Dennis Eckert from Cleveland and Congressman Dick Armey from Texas. I showed six different congressmen the debt and projected deficits for the next several years, and every one of them said, "Gee, I didn't know it was that bad. I didn't realize where we were headed." They had no idea that the ball game is going to be over in 1995. Now, Dick was an economics professor, and he's probably the most knowledgeable man in Congress on economics. But after I showed him the projections, Dick Armey said, "Harry, you just ruined my day." And I said, "Well, it's about time. Peter ruined mine back in 82, and I haven't had a good day since." Now, surveys today show that the national debt and the deficit are uppermost in the minds of the American people. Congress recognizes this, and they say that it was the savings and loan crisis that finally brought it home to the American people. But I say it was perfectly understandable all along, because the Americans have been struggling personally with debts and deficits and budgets all of their lives, and they know what happens to them if they don't live within their personal income. So naturally, they begin to worry when they see a profitable country that is not living within its income, and has not lived within its income since 1933. So I want to put this massive problem into the context of the person in the street and show you why the government is headed into real trouble. Let's say you have a net take-home pay of $1,000, and you take $100 of that $1,000 and you put it into some kind of a pension plan, like, say, a Kroger, an IRA, or a 401k. The other $900 just is enough to make ends meet, pays all your bills. Now, suppose somebody gives you a free credit card, and they give you American Express, Visa, MasterCard, Discover card, whatever you want. But you realize that you can't use these credit cards. Then, all of a sudden, you meet a very tall man with a long white beard, a stovepipe hat, red and white striped pants, and a blue coat with stars all over it, and he says, "My name is Sam. I'm Uncle Sam. I am your financial advisor, and I want you to follow my advice. I want you to use your credit cards. And when they bill you, just send them a 30-year IOU at 8% interest." And you say, "Yeah, but I have to pay the interest even if I accept the IOUs." Sam says, "Do you remember that $100 that you were putting in a pension? Take that $100 and use that to pay the interest and put an IOU in your pension. 20 years from now, you'll have 20 years of IOUs. But what do you care?" So you remind Uncle Sam that there's a difference between you and me. You've got a printing press in your basement which gives you unlimited credit, but I'm going to go to jail if I do that. And that's why Americans are concerned, because they know that they cannot keep going on like this forever. There's an end to this. But before I go any further, let me explain the difference between the deficit and the debt, for those of you that might not be familiar with these two terms, debt and deficit. First of all, the deficit is the shortfall that we have in any one calendar year. So if you take in $100 billion and you spend $110 billion, you get a deficit of $10 billion. Now, at the end of that year, you've got to do something with that $10 billion that you owe. So you move that $10 billion deficit over to your long-term shortfall, and that becomes your debt. Well, in 1982, the annual deficit was $128 billion. That was up from $4 billion in 1974. The debt in 1982 was at $1 trillion. That was up from $484 billion in 1974. But it had taken us 200 years from the start of our republic until 1974 to create that debt of $484 billion. We had gone through World War I, World War II, the Korean War, Vietnam, and we still had a very manageable situation in 1974. But since 1982, when the debt first hit $1 trillion, it has now tripled. It is now $3 trillion. Now, when Peter Grace called me and a number of others down to Washington in 1982, we were commissioned by President Reagan to find some savings in government. And I can tell you that it was like shooting fish in a rain barrel. We contributed $77 million of corporate money and 500 employees. We found $424 billion in savings in 9 months. And we could easily have identified over $1 trillion in savings, but President Reagan was not interested in going any further. Now, of the $424 billion that we identified, Congress instituted $152 billion in savings by 1986. Spread annually, that averages $38 billion in savings a year. And at the same time, President Reagan pushed through a $50 billion tax increase. Now you take the $50 billion of new revenue and $38 billion that we saved, that's $88 billion a year that should have gone to reduce the deficit, which at that time, remember, was $128 billion a year. So we should have dropped the annual deficit to $40 billion a year, but instead of that, the government says we ran a $152 billion deficit last year. So the problem is this. In the last 10 years, government revenue has risen by 8% a year compounded, but the government's expenditures have gone up 11% per year compounded. Now, you know, that doesn't sound like very much, but let me put that into perspective. Right now, Congress has 116% more money to spend than they had 10 years ago. But they have spent 186% more than they spent 10 years ago. So every time that you give government $1, they spend $1.58. And I'll tell you what I learned in Washington. They not only don't understand this problem, they don't even care about it. So the thing that finally brought me up short and has ruined my last 8 years were the projections that Peter got from his economist. And these numbers that I'm going to give you, I've had verified in the last 6 months by the Citizens Against Government Waste. The Citizens Against Government Waste said that they are current. Now, we are at $1 trillion in debt. That's in 1982. $1 trillion. Now, that debt is going to go to $13 trillion by the year 2000. And we're at an annual deficit of $128 billion, and the deficit is going to go to $2 trillion. I'm going to interject something right here, boys and girls. Remember, this is written in 1983. This is called the Grace Commission Report. It's put out by Harry E. Figge, Jr. If you take a look at the numbers here, the year 2005, their projections are off by about 5 years. Instead of hitting $13 trillion by the year 2000, they're going to hit $13 trillion by about the year 2012, about 7 years from now. The numbers that were projected back in the 80s didn't materialize to the extent that their projections showed, but the projections have come to pass, but at a later date. So we have a few more years to get our house in order. Today we don't need to worry about getting our house in order. The time to have done that was between 1982 and 2000, and we didn't do it. Now it's too late to get our house in order. All that we have to worry about now is how do you prepare from the impending collapse? The collapse is coming. We just don't know how severe it's going to be. We don't know when it's going to happen, when the shoe's going to fall. But everybody is in agreement. We've already gone way beyond the point of no return. Now that we're beyond the point of no return, the airplane is still flying. It's just that we don't have enough gas in this airplane to get to where we want to go. And all that's underneath us is a great big ocean. And at some point in time, it's going to run out of gas. We just don't know when. We just don't know where. We just know that there's not enough gas in this airplane to get to land. Now, that's where we're at. So when I raise the question here, is your retirement at risk? Your retirement is at risk. There isn't going to be any retirement for most of you people listening to me now. And you people who have already retired are going to have a double whammy because your retirement money is going to be shut off. And it'll be shut off at a time when you're no longer able to go out and work. It would have been better for this fellow, Ed Beltram, and his father-in-law, had they never retired, had they just kept right on working, 99 miles an hour, and preparing for this inevitable collapse. But Ed Beltram doesn't even know that there's a problem. You know, the average American, as he listens to Bob Schieffer and Jim Lehrer on the news, the news hour, as they listen to the reports that are coming in, it never even occurs to them, oh my God, the population has doubled to 6 billion and it's on its way to 12 billion over the next 30 years. If you project over the next 30 years, if you can't feed 6 billion today and you can't pay your debts today, what in the hell are you going to do when you got twice as many people making twice as many demands? And with half as much water and half as much oil. Has everybody lost their minds? Is there no one out there that's able to add and subtract, multiply and divide, to think into the future and say, oh my God. You know, when I was a youngster and I had my first child, I said to myself, gosh, this is a big change. Now I got a wife and a kid I got to feed, then a second and a third and a fourth, and then finally a fifth. You know, by the time I had five children and a wife, I was working full time feeding, clothing, and housing my family. And it occurred to me, what would I do if I had two wives and 10 children or four wives and 20 children? It occurred to me. I wouldn't be able. There would not be enough strength in my body to feed, clothe, and house that many people. And that's the problem that we have here in America. It's the problem that we now have worldwide. It's structural in nature, boys and girls. It's not cyclical. It's not something that's going to pass. It's something that's here today, and it's going to stay with us and get worse as time progresses along. No, boys and girls, we're not concerned about is your retirement safe, but whether or not your life is safe. Stand by. Now, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the law school and the law hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. For more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives. And all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the internet by title and date for your listening convenience. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the internet, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events 7 days a week. Remember, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. To order yours, just call the law school direct at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, the sponsors, the management or staff of this network or local radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, remember our website, georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, talking about, is your retirement at risk? The answer is, you bet it is. In fact, your retirement, if you're drawing it right now, is coming to an end. And if you're looking forward to your retirement, it is not going to materialize. But all of you are going to be paid 100 cents on the dollar. Every legal obligation that the United States government has, it's going to fulfill. Your private obligations that are owed to you by your company, your employer, may or may not be fulfilled. But the government will fulfill all of its obligations. They are going to pay you in dollars every penny that they have promised you. It's just that all of those dollars that they give you aren't going to buy anything. So you're going to be paid with worthless dollars until finally it collapses in a whirlwind of hyperinflation. And that's guaranteed by our new Federal Reserve Chairman, Ben Helicopter Bernanke. All right, we are reviewing the Figge Report. This comes from the Grace Commission in 1983. Now, Harry Figge says, the thing that finally brought me up short and has ruined my last 8 years were the projections that Peter got from his economist. And that was that these numbers I'm going to give you have had verified in the last 6 months by the Citizens Against Government Way, so they're current. We're at $1 trillion in debt in 1982. Write that down, boys and girls. $1 trillion in 82. That debt's going to $13 trillion by the year 2000. That's a projection. It isn't going to hit $13 trillion until the year 2012. And we're at the annual deficit of $128 billion, and the deficit is going to go to $2 trillion. But that isn't going to happen until sometime after 2012. So they were ahead of themselves, and that's where we took our break. Now, let me graph the debt on my thumb and forefinger. I've got my thumb horizontal and my finger vertical. You've got 1776 way out here at the tip of my thumb, and the debt line runs along my thumb absolutely flat. That's until 1976. Then it gets up into the web of my thumb in about 1980, and then it starts to come up. By 1995, we're at the first knuckle of my finger. Now you turn asymptotic. That's asymptotic. You're going straight up. And by the year 2000, you're straight up to the top. Now, what does that mean? Well, it means that when we hit the $500 billion a year deficit, here about 1995, going to the $2 trillion deficit in 2000, we've lost our ability to control our economy by taxation. And we run the risk of something that I'm going to talk about called hyperinflation. Hyperinflation is coming to America. Indeed, hyperinflation is coming to the world. It will be the introduction to Global 2000 and the New World Order. Back in 1982, I said, well, we've got some time and nobody's going to be this stupid. We're going to get people to understand this thing, and I am now very sorry to tell you that as I stand here in 1990, we're somewhere between 1990 and 93 in our project projections, a little ahead of target. I was with Senator Bob Dole the other day. He'd just come from the White House budget negotiations, and he said, "We didn't make any progress again today, but we will." Now, you've all heard about the Graham-Rudman Act. It used to be Graham, Rudman, and Hollings, but Senator Hollings said he wanted a divorce from the bill because it was such a travesty. Graham, Rudman originally said that we would have a zero deficit in 1991, but revised that to $60 to $65 billion 2 years later. The reason Congress runs around like chickens with their heads cut off now is technically, unless they get a budget agreement, they've got to cut $100 billion out of the budget this year because they're at $168 billion. The thing that I want to tell you is that the $168 billion you hear is a travesty. It's a lie. It's a lie foisted off on the American people. Now, do you remember all those IOUs that you were peeling out of your pension fund and your credit card fees? Well, government doesn't count those as part of the cash deficit. Now, we have for 6 years run an actual deficit in the United States government of over $250 billion. And this year, we're running between $360 and $435 billion. While we tell people that it's $250 billion, but it's really $435 billion. So let me explain that to you. You see, you start with the Graham-Rudman bill. That's $168 billion. Now remember the credit card example when you took $100 away from the Kroger or the IRA and you sent them an IOU? That's what the government's doing. You see, the government is doing that to the 9 trust funds, including Social Security, military pensions, railway pensions, and postal pensions. So the government, Uncle Sam, is taking $120 billion in trust fund surpluses, and then they're replacing that money with IOUs. So instead of funding them with cash, they're funding them with federal deficit. Then they don't count those IOUs or the interest on them. And when those IOUs start coming due, the government is going to owe trillions of dollars to Social Security. And Social Security will be supporting more retirees with fewer workers paying taxes into the fund. So that's the first thing that's been foisted off on the people. The second thing is the savings and loan crisis. Mossbacher, our country's head economist, made very sure when Bush stuck his neck out on the savings and loan crisis that those costs were taken off the deficit. Current estimates are that the savings and loans will cost us $500 billion overall and $100 billion next year. There's another $100 billion that's not being counted. So the deficit has gone from $168 billion to $338 billion, and I haven't talked to you about the student loan problem. And I haven't talked to you about the $300 to $500 billion toxic waste cleanup problem that's going to come from our military bases. And I haven't mentioned to you the crack babies or AIDS or any new programs that Congress is talking about right now. So we're running right now a true deficit of between $300 and $500 billion a year, and my estimate is that at $500 billion, we will lose our capability to control that by taxation. Now don't ever think for a minute that Congress doesn't want inflation, because they know very well that the only way they can ever pay off the debt is with inflated dollars. So if that isn't bad enough, the financial structure of the United States is now very tenuous. Now let me give you a few examples. We definitely have a recession on the horizon, and we're just beginning to see it. It's a place where we're seeing it in furniture, in housing, all through construction and in aerospace. Now let's talk about our commercial banks. You see, since 1983, 713 commercial banks have failed. Now that's only 5% of the commercial banks in the United States, but when you fail 5% of your banks in good times, can you imagine what bad times are going to do to banks? The Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation Chairman Bill Seidman came out the other day and he said, if we get a severe recession, the safety net that we have under the commercial banks will never hold. And that's because there isn't enough money in it. Most people don't realize this, but 13 insurance companies failed in 1988. Now, I'm talking about property and casualty, not health insurance companies. 39 failed in 1989. So we've had 52 insurance companies fail in the past 2 years. Do you get that, boys and girls? 1988 and 89, 52 insurance companies failed. The other thing that you don't hear about is that the federal government is underwriting $5.8 trillion of debt from things that aren't even government, such as federal deposit insurance, loan guarantees, pension programs, government-sponsored enterprises, and direct loan programs, and it goes on and on from there. If we get a severe downturn, and after 50-some years of recovery, it's got to be sitting out there somewhere, we're going to be, to steal the words of a man whose lips we all watched very carefully, George Bush Sr., in very deep doo-doo. What I find so frightening is the rapid rate of deterioration. It's the old story that the light at the end of the tunnel may be the oncoming train. But when we can go 200 years and create less than half a trillion dollars in debt, and then in the next 16 years go to $3 trillion in debt, we're really seeing things get bad, and they're getting bad faster and faster. So the question is this, what's going to happen? One of the people that I respect most in government is Chuck Boucher, the former Arthur Andersen partner who's Comptroller General of the United States. Chuck was sent to New York City about a decade ago to straighten out the financial problems of New York City. And he said that he and the governor, Governor Kerry, sat at a table day after day and Kerry made real tough decisions until they got New York City into the kind of shape where they could sell its bonds again. And so I took my hyperinflation scenario to Chuck, and I said, Chuck, tell me I'm wrong. And he said, you're wrong. And I said, great. So then tell me what's going to happen. So Chuck told me the story. He said, we're going to have a fiscal panic. We're going to get to the point where the central banks of the world, like Japan and Germany, can see that we're not going to be able to service our debt here in the United States, and they're going to quit buying our notes. And I said, great. Now, we're going to have a fiscal panic. We're not going to go to hyperinflation. Can you imagine a businessman standing around cheering for a financial panic? But nothing happened. And after 4 weeks, I started to wonder what those bonds were doing. I think you know that at one point, Japan was buying 35% of our debt. But in about the last 6 to 8 weeks, the Japanese market broke. I found that the Japanese have scaled back. But the Saudis came in and replaced them 100%. Now we're back to my original scenario, which incidentally scares the living hell out of me. What our charts show is that by 1995, we're not going to be able to control our deficit and our debt by taxation, and we're going to move to what's called hyperinflation. And by hyperinflation, I mean severe hyperinflation, runaway inflation that leads to devaluation of currency. So in Brazil and Argentina, they have lopped 6 zeros off their money in the last few years. And that meant that if you had $1 million at the first lop, you had $1,000. And the second lop, you had $1. I'll talk to you a little bit about that. Now, during World War II, when I was fighting house to house in Germany, I found an old cigar box on the floor where a bunch of money had spilled out. I picked it up and I looked at it, and it was Weimar Republic money from 1923. It was totally worthless. So I picked up about 8 or 10 of those bills, and I liberated them, and I brought them home. They hang in my office today, and one especially frightens me because it is a hundred million marks. Did you get that, boys and girls? 100 million marks. In 1923, they were taking bushel baskets of those 100 million mark notes down to the store to try and buy some potatoes and to get some bread. And so that's a great reminder to me. Now, to find out about hyperinflation, we looked at all of the countries in the world. The German and French experience with hyperinflation was too long ago. Israel is a microcosm. Russia is an unknown. Yugoslavia was just getting started, but we're up to about 2,000%. So then we looked at South America and we said, there's where it's at. So we picked Argentina, Brazil, and Bolivia as the best examples of hyperinflation in the 20th century in South America. Now, the problem that I run into when I talk to people about this is that they say, oh, you studied the banana republics. And I have two parts to my answer. The first is, well, welcome to the United States Banana Republic. And the second answer, and most people don't know this, and that is that in 1938, the fifth largest market in the world was the country of Argentina. Think of that. Argentina, 1938. The fifth largest economy in the world. It was very sophisticated, very well run, and very knowledgeable. Argentina had an excellent agriculture, excellent manufacturing, and they had good resources. They are now the world's 78th largest market. So if you think it can't happen in the United States, believe it, it can. It happened in Argentina. And for our study, we were very fortunate because we were able to meet with 80 top businessmen in those three countries, Bolivia, Brazil, and Argentina. And they weren't just businessmen. They were government officials, bankers, financial executives. Dr. Jerry Swanson, an economist from the University of Arizona, led the team and took one of our group controllers and our director of purchasing, and they took four trips over a two-year period. And the thing that happened is that all 80 of these businessmen said to us, what's wrong with the United States? You're on exactly the same course that we were on 20 or 30 years ago. And they said, everything that we did wrong, you Americans are doing wrong. For example, you have large budget deficits. You have a deterioration in your balance of payments deficit. You have eroded the confidence in your currency. You have a tendency to blame outsiders and call for protectionism. And finally, the exchange value of your currency is falling. And twice since the mid-70s, we've devalued our currency, and there's pressure now to devalue our currency again. They said, all five factors are in place, and the United States is following the path to hyperinflation. We cannot understand why that you don't see this coming. When Jerry came back from his last trip, I said, will Jerry give me a synopsis? And he said, well, for years in my economics courses at the University of Arizona, I've been teaching my students that deficits cause inflation. Then he said, they do. And I just saw it in three countries in South America. So I said, okay, Jerry, tell me about hyperinflation. How much time do you have before hyperinflation sets in? And he said, in Brazil, it set in 3 days. Did you get that, boys and girls? 3 days. 3 days. Now, the terrible thing about hyperinflation is that once it gets started, you can't stop it. You see them trying to stop it now in Argentina, and you see them trying to stop it in Brazil. Brazil's a great example. They put in wage and price controls like Nixon did back in 73. And then they seized 80% of the capital of the people. They did all the right things. But 54% of the people worked for the government, and they turned around and gave them pay increases to keep pace. They're reinflating right now. During the time that we were studying this, Argentina's inflation hit 5,000%. Brazil's inflation got to 5,000%. Bolivia's inflation got to 25,000%, with bursts of up to 50,000% per year. So let me tell you how bad that is. We have a book here that we published on how to survive hyperinflation if you're a businessman. And we have a picture of a guy with a huge bag going into the bank in Bolivia. At the bank, they simply weighed it, and they gave him a note of exchange. Now, here's the terrible thing about this, and that is that nobody looked into the bag. They didn't care whether he had newspapers in there, old socks, $1,000 bills, $10,000 bills, or dollar bills. They didn't care what it was. And that's because the money was so worthless. And that is what happens in hyperinflation. The money simply becomes worthless. So to say that this can't happen here is wrong. And I hear the argument periodically that the reason that it won't happen to us is that our deficit is only 5% of our gross national product. Well, boys and girls, the Brazilian and Argentine deficits were only 8% of their gross national products. Now, it's not a huge jump from 5 to 8%. So when these economies and these economists give you the garbage that our deficit is only a few percentage points of the gross national product, remember this, that doesn't mean a thing. If inflation hit South America's standards, in 1 month a cab out to the airport would go from $15 to $600. And our guys went into a supermarket in South America and they watched a lady pick up a loaf of bread only to have the price change before she got to the cash register. And the standard joke down here is, take a cab, don't take a bus. In a cab you don't have to pay until you get out, and by then the money is worth less. Right now, Yugoslavia has over 2,000% inflation. You have inflation in Israel. You don't read much about it, but you have very severe inflation in Russia. There's inflation going on all around the world. And when you look behind it, it's due to the budget deficits of the governments. Well, boys and girls, that's what Bill Bonner just told us. You remember? According to the Bush Friendly Heritage Foundation, federal deficits are expected to rise to $1 trillion a year by the year 2017 and a $16 trillion national debt, twice today's level. After that, deficit should grow by $2 trillion a year. The Figge report was off by a few years, but boys and girls, hyperinflation is coming to a city near you. And when it does, it's going to wipe out your pension. It's going to wipe out your job. It's going to wipe out your savings. Then what are you going to do? It's not a very enticing prospect, is it? It isn't something that you really want to look forward to. Now, is it? Well, stand by, because there's more to come next time on the Law Hour, an editorial review as we talk about, is your retirement at risk next time, right here on the Law Hour. So let me give you a final reminder here today that you're listening to the Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Time's up. I got to leave it right there, so we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, and good night, friends.